Hello, my name is Jim Judges. I'm a senior academic technologist at the University of Warwick, and this is the LDCU Talking Online Learning podcast, episode 3. In this episode, I had the pleasure of chatting with Shaheen Charlwood, who's a senior teaching fellow in engineering maths at WMG. In this discussion, Shaheen tells me about the Mobius project, which is being developed by herself and colleagues Judith Brown and Jesse Young. As we will hear, the tool makes good use of the branching options in the Moodle lesson tool. However, it was just as interesting to hear about Shaheen's philosophies and ideas about teaching, as well as finding out a little bit about her own background and personal journey into maths and the world of education. In the second part of the podcast, Steve Gascoigne, Senior Teaching Fellow from Lifelong Learning, tells about how he delivered an entire module online over the summer and shares some of his experiences, lessons learned, and tips for engaging learners. Steve also highlights some of the key differences between online and face-to-face classroom teaching and shares how he has overcome some of the challenges of teaching at a distance. Steve also offers some of his ideas and motivations for creating an active, inclusive, and what sounds like enjoyable online experience. So I'm here with Shaheen Charlwood, but rather than me introduce you, perhaps you could introduce yourself, say a little bit about who you are, what you do at Warwick, and what you're currently working on.
Sure. My name's Shaheen Charlwood and I'm a senior teaching fellow in engineering maths at WMG. I've taught the full-time traditional background students in School of Engineering math support and also the part-time degree apprentices at WMG since about 2013, so about 7 years now.
So what are you doing at the moment?
Well, at the moment, I'm teaching on the engineering maths year one and year two programmes at WMG, but I'm also spending quite a bit of time on a new resource that I've created called Mobius, which is the maths online bridge for individualised undergraduate studies, which I'll tell you a little bit more about.
Yes. Oh, that's great. And I like the name. To any maths fans out there, that's good. So, Shaheen, could you give us a bit of background to the project and tell us what sort of need it's fulfilling?
Yeah, sure. Well, the background is that very early on teaching the degree apprentices, I noticed that the students that needed the most support had two things in common. The first one was that they had gaps in their knowledge. It wasn't so much skills gaps. They could perform methods, but they didn't have the concepts pinned down. And so these gaps would pop up everywhere, you know, and cause them problems. And the second thing that I noticed was that they had very low self-confidence in their own maths ability. Both of those things then led to the students who needed the most help being the least being the most reticent to ask questions. They had a belief that everyone else somehow was finding things easy and that therefore their questions weren't valid. So trying to draw out those students was what I wanted to do. That was the background. What I wanted was something that would direct the student to where they needed to go, depending on whether they needed support or whether they needed extension, etc. So the job of a teacher, effectively. But without a teacher breathing down their necks and something where they could feel safe making mistakes and learning for themselves. So that was the idea.
Can I just ask you about that? Sorry to jump in. I'm interested in that. Yeah, so this idea of getting students to make mistakes, because it is no doubt the case that that students can learn more when they get things wrong. So absolutely. How have you been able to get technology to help with that?
Well, that's really interesting because I've noticed this from years back. I've been teaching since 1994 and I've noticed that students are much happier having a go online, you know, digitally, rather than committing themselves to something on paper. They're very worried about having something written down, which is wrong. So the computer is really good because you can type in something, which is a guess, your best guess at that point, and you can get some feedback, which will allow you to then have another guess. And it doesn't feel like you've committed yourself to making a mistake, which everyone can then see, because you're doing it in your own time with the computer, with the program that you're working on. What I created was this thing called, well, I didn't actually term the phrase hinge questions. That was Dylan William, an educationalist that I'd been reading about in 2013. And he came up with this idea of hinge questions, because his philosophy is that there's a lot of teachers who, and he's a maths teacher as well, actually, by the way, but he was talking about all education. He's saying that a lot of teachers, they plan their lessons and they work out what learning is required and the learning outcomes and all of that stuff, but they never really know exactly what learning is happening. And because of that, they can't respond or react appropriately or in time. And he was saying that once the lesson, for instance, is finished, it's very hard then to go back and say, oh, well, you know, you might be able to do a test or an assessment to find out. But it's very hard to then go back and plug the gaps. And he was saying that along the way, you should be trying to get that information so that if there's anything you can do about it, you can do it right there and then as the learning is actually taking place. So the worst thing that can happen is that you go into a lecture and you teach it and you think that everybody has understood everything, and there might be 30% of the students that really are having a problem with something, but you don't know that. And the point is that we want to know that, because then we can do something about it. So that was this idea of a hinge question, where you get to about a halfway or two thirds of the way through things, through a piece of teaching. And then you ask a question to then decide whether you should move on or whether you should go back and look at, relook at something.
And can I just jump in there? Thank you, Shane. This is all interesting. It's good to hear about the ideas and perhaps philosophy behind it. Now, in a live session, a tutor might ask a question and get hands up, or they might even switch to using tools like the clickers or Vvox. But you're talking here about an asynchronous tool. So I think anyone listening to this would be interested to know how you've managed to build that into your tool. So how have you managed that?
Well, what worked out was all the learning outcomes that I wanted for this math support. So within algebra, for instance, there were, you know, certain fundamental things that I wanted the students to be able to do. And within that thing, within that learning outcome, then I worked out that if I worked out a question that would give me a good indication of whether that student had understood and would be able to complete that learning outcome. And that question I then created as a multiple choice question with five different answers. And each answer was designed, which took quite a lot of time. So the hinge question design does take some time, but it's really worth it, because the answers that you get tell you what the student needs. So it might be that they need some support because there's a basic misunderstanding of the concept here, or it might be that they might know what to do, in which case you can say, well done, you've passed this, you can go on to the next steps in your learning. There might be a misconception, they might need some practice, they might need to see an example. So all of those things are options that I created in the resource Mobius. So there's support, there's depth, there's enrichment, there's misconceptions, there's practice, there's examples, or there's a direction to go to the next steps. And all of those things are covered with videos that I've made using Teams. Very simple, just recorded myself doing a meeting and then uploaded it to the streams, and either videos, or there's documents, or there's links, you know, there's a whole range of different things available for the students, depending on how they answered.
And just to get a picture of how this would work, so if I'm a student, a little bit perhaps not so confident in a topic, I have a go and I don't get it right, then what happens at that stage? Do I get given or directed to some extra resources before I can have another go?
When we started to design it, what we realized was that rather than make it too narrow, we would give, every time somebody answered something, we would give them three options on the page. And the options would be, so for instance, in terms of support, it might say, would you like to watch a support video on, let's say, directed numbers? Yes. Or it might say, so that's one option. The other option is, would you like to practice this before trying this question again? So there's some practice questions. Or it might say, would you like to see some examples? And there's a video of me doing some examples. Yes. So you get different kinds of support offered to you depending on what you would prefer to do before you try that question again.
If I can ask you then, I know that this is being built in Moodle. Can you say a little bit about how that's being done?
I've got a lot of help from Judith and Jessie from the Education Director's Office, who are experts in this. And what they've managed to do is create this resource using lessons in Moodle as opposed to quiz, so that the procedure of going through one lesson and moving on to the next stage or going being directed to another place for support, etc., is all done within the lessons framework rather than using quiz. And I know that Judith has made a template so that she was of the mind that actually once we've got this template, it doesn't have to be just maths. You know, you could actually create lots of resource based in other areas as well.
Excellent. Yes, and I have seen this being used for one or two other sessions, including an introduction to Microsoft Teams. So as you say, you can use this type of tool for anything, perhaps. Can you say anything about any lessons you've learned? So if you were perhaps starting this project again, or when you go into phase two, is there anything that you've learned already from your experience?
Gosh, yeah, there's loads of things that I've learned. And somebody told me at the beginning of the project, a very wise person said, you know, write things down because you'll learn so much and then you'll forget about it. So write it down. And, you know, every so often I have to remind myself to write things down because I am learning so much. It's such a huge learning curve, very rapid one. Mainly what I've learned is that when you teach maths online, digital inking is the way to go. So when you're inking with explanations live at the same time, then the useful thing is that that slows down the information and students then get the time to develop the ideas as you're talking through them.
Yes.
If you just sort of, you know, use a presentation, a PowerPoint, for instance, and just have a bunch of math suddenly appears on the page, that is quite daunting for students and they just get really put off because all of that mathematical notation, they don't understand it. So
Yes.
without having the, you know, yeah, the talking through, it really helps.
That's a hot topic, actually. And when you say digital inking, are you well, perhaps you can say what tool or device you're using there, because I know there are a number of options.
So the way that I do it is I use Microsoft Teams to record a meeting where I'm just meeting myself effectively, and I share my screen and I use OneNote and I write notes in that as I'm teaching. So just like it would be on a whiteboard, I suppose, but with my voice at the same time. Sorry.
Is that with a stylus that you're doing that? So are you
Yeah,
using a
it's just
tablet
an
or?
old. Yeah, I'm, what I've got is a Surface. Which my department has given us, all the teachers have one. And I've got a digital, just a stylus, and I just write on the screen with that.
Oh, excellent. Yes. And I know that some tutors also like to use perhaps an overhead webcam, like a visualizer. Is that something you've experimented with, or do you think this is a preferred method for you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, writing on paper is always preferable to writing with digitally because I'm quite a neat freak when I'm writing,
Yes.
especially when I'm teaching. And if I feel like I know something, it has to be neatly done. And
Okay.
I just can't quite get to terms with how neat, you know, how messy it is using the slippy surface as opposed to writing on paper. So when I'm teaching face to face, I always have a visualizer and I write on paper. So
Yes.
this has taken a bit of getting used to, and trying to write neatly using digital inking is a little bit more because it's just more slippy. I don't get the
Yes.
same the same feeling as I would do with a pencil on paper.
And can you say a little bit about how the current situation has been affecting your teaching?
We never had the confidence that we could do this online teaching or that it would work. And then with the current situation, you know, lockdown number one happening so suddenly, we did just didn't have time to panic and we just had to do it. And it turned out it wasn't hard at all. And that was
Yes.
amazing, you know. And so it made me reflect because one of the math teachers said to me previously, she just said that, you know, nearly all of human creation has only happened because some you get forced to come out of your comfort zone.
That's right.
And yeah, and I thought, my gosh, you know, I've been reflecting on that and thinking, yeah, how many years we've been thinking about doing this online teaching, but
That's right.
never had the confidence, and now we just do because we had to, you know, there wasn't any other option.
But have you got any general technology tips and advice in addition to what you've been talking about?
One thing that I would say is that I've seen lots of hours of teacher time be spent on creation of resource that isn't always very well used. And what I realized is that it was that just having a list of resources is not enough, and that students need direction, especially if you're expecting students with low confidence to gain something from this, because they're already frightened. So the whole idea of creating the safe space, making the mistakes, and in Mobius, what I've done is there's lots of videos of me with my face, you know, talking through things and speaking to them about how they're approaching things. So it's not just the math skills, but how to cope when you feel out of your comfort zone, how to cope with what does learning actually look like, having the right set of expectations. Often people think that if they're stuck, that means that they can't do it. You know, being stuck is what learning feels like. That's kind of normal. So just being told that that is okay is part of the issue, is that you have to have a bit of time to feel like that, because one of the things I mentioned in Mobius is that you have to have invested emotionally to be able to learn something. Giving flexibility to the students is really important. I spoke to somebody in another department actually about this quite a while ago, and they said to me, how long does it take? You know, how long would it take for a student to work through all of this? And I said, well, I've designed it so that it should take everybody the amount of time it should take them individually.
Yes.
So I do not want everybody to watch every single thing. That's the point. Because if you know how to do something, you should be able to get to the point where you need the help and then spend the time there. I don't want to force people to watch a bunch of things that they know how to do, because that's hugely off-putting. If I had to do that, I'd just stop doing it. I wouldn't be interested in it.
I'm sure you wouldn't want to blow your own trumpet, but I understand from my research that you received a Warwick Teaching Excellence Award this year. Can you say anything about that? That must have been.
I did. Yeah, that was amazing. Especially so because it was the students who'd nominated me, so that was particularly humbling. But really, I think Mobius and that award are all part of the same thing, because what I want to do is I want to provide help for students to get to the point where they need to be at. And I find that sometimes students are struggling with this sense of elitism almost that a university has, you know, like, oh, well, you should be at this level. And they almost, even if when it's unsaid, they feel that. And so this is about saying it's OK to say you don't understand things. That's absolutely fine. There's loads of things people don't understand. You know, all the people you think understand things, they all have weak areas, and that's absolutely fine. And in doing so, they get the belief, because I believe that they can do it, and they need to believe that. And once they believe it, they can do it. They really can. You know, the majority of people can do it.
Presumably, I would imagine that you probably wish that you'd had something like this when you were learning maths, or were you lucky enough to have great teachers and they presented it just as well in different ways?
I had the best teachers. I can't tell you how lucky I was from the age of 11 right through, you know, till I stopped learning maths and teaching myself. I had the best teachers you could ask for. I had three amazing, strong Yorkshire women. And the thing that they did for me, and the thing that I always try and do, and I just thought that's what teaching was, is that they made me believe that I belonged where they were taking me. That was the key thing, you know, that I didn't for one second think that I didn't belong. And yet when I think back now, you know, I was just a small, chunky kid, Asian kid in Bradford. And, you know, I didn't belong in the education system in the way that I wasn't a natural fit at all. My background, my race, my you know, the fact that I'm working class, all of that stuff. But it never occurred to me, because the people that were teaching me made me feel completely as if I belonged there. And so that was never an issue to me. And so now when I teach people, and especially degree apprentices, because predominantly they are actually white working class boys, and they don't feel like they belong in higher education. You know, they're nervous about it. And so that is the key thing for me, is that that's what I'm always trying to do, is make them feel like they belong. They belong where I'm trying to take them. And the minute Excellent. They believe that, then, you know, it makes everything so much easier for everyone.
Thank you, Shaheen. That's all really interesting to hear about. And thanks for sparing the time to tell us about the Mobius project as well. I hope that phase two goes well, and also all the best for the rest of the term.
Thank you. You're very welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Rather than me introduce you, Steve, perhaps you could introduce yourself. Tell us a bit about your background, work experience, as well as your current role and any activity you're involved in.
Yeah, sure. Hi, James. So I'm Steve Gascoigne from the Centre for Lifelong Learning. I'm a senior teaching fellow. I've been in this role for 5 years. I have been teaching online for about the last 3 or so years at Warwick. Most importantly, over the summer, I taught an entire module online. I also have a little contract teaching for the Open University, and there I've been teaching online for what could be almost 10 years now through various different platforms.
The module you ran over the summer then, Steve, that went entirely online, how many students were involved in that? What was that? And can you perhaps pick some experiences out from that?
Yeah, I can. So the module was called Gateway to HE. It's an intensive study skills course offered to members of the local community, adult learners who wish to go to university. Typically, these are people who left school with no qualifications. And they've been working, or they've been doing other things for a certain amount of time, and they now wish to have a bit of a change in their life. And they're with us. So I'm getting them ready for Warwick, making them Warwick ready, I say. That's my copyright there, Warwick ready. And this course lasts for 20 weeks. We're in the classroom for 3 hours. And this time we had to go fully online. And this happened rapidly. So I met these students for their interview around February time, perhaps some in March. We were still able at that point to shake hands. I did meet them face to face, but importantly, these students have never met each other face to face. So the course was entirely online. We tried a few platforms to start with for the first few weeks before we settled. I had a large group, 34 students. That is about 15 more than I would normally get. And I believe it was because it was offered online that attracted more than we would normally get, because the students would normally have to come in. They would have to come in the evening, and some may not be able to do that. So that's the course.
Am I right in thinking as well that some University of Warwick staff on occasions join this programme?
Yes, they do. Normally taking learning credits afterwards to do the degree. In a typical delivery of Gateway, I would have 2 or 3 members of staff.
How did you arrange the content? What was the mix between live and asynchronous? So can you say something about how things went, at least at the start, and how it was arranged?
Yes. At the start, it was week by week, and there were some failings and there were some difficulties, but we pulled through. For a couple of years, I'd been offering online sessions to my students whenever we couldn't get into the classroom. For example, if my boy was ill from school, rather than cancelling, I'd go online. We'd used Skype for Business, which was not ideal, but I had a bit of experience of talking to students online. To start with, what I very rapidly realised was that my PowerPoints, which I would use in the classroom, would not work online. They absolutely would not. And I think that is the biggest lesson here, that you can't deliver the same material online. It needs to be changed. You can't talk at your students in the same way online that you can talk to them when you are in the classroom. So I had to edit my material.
Yeah. Can I just ask you about that? Why is that then? Because from my simple point of view, I think, well, whether you're in front of the students in class or whether you're delivering live now, I can still add the same information and bring that content to life. But so what sorts of things mean it's different then, do you think?
In my classes, I'm guided a lot by my students. I run my modules in a workshop format. I encourage interruptions. I want the students to be able to interrupt me and say, I've got an experience here, which Steve, it fits. I want them to stop me and ask for clarification. And one of the big things we're missing online is body language. We've lost a really important method of communication, and we don't realize how important body language is until it's gone. So a lot of things, a student who wants to say something but hasn't quite put their hand up, but I can tell by looking at them they want to say something. I can say, oh, do you have something there in mind? I've lost that online. I've lost a student that almost puts their hand up, or a student who seems interested. All of that's gone. So I've got to think of a way to get them to communicate to me differently.
So what did you do to get around that?
So the primary message is on PowerPoint, what I want to deliver. So I made a point of not having more than one PowerPoint slide, which was full of bullet points. I would have a bullet point slide, as I typically would have in the classroom, followed then by a blank slide, written up on the top, any questions. And I would make sure that that happened all the time. And I would ask, is that clear? Is that okay? Do you want to say anything now? And it would be blank to invite people to say things. And I would say to them, look, speak if you can. There's a chat box as well. However you want to communicate. I'll just let this sit for a few minutes. And sometimes, rather than saying any questions, I may ask a question related to what I've just been talking about. So I'm giving opportunities for students to speak, because I've lost the visual signals that say, I want to speak.
Yes, that sounds good. And building in those slides to remind you to put those breaks in and to check that sounds like a good idea. What about, however, there still may well be students who might be lurking and less confidence. Did you find any ways of making sure you involved all the students, or what do you think about that?
I think all students should be involved. But I think that students should be involved in the way they want to be involved, rather than the way that I want. I've got to be flexible to them rather than the other way around. When I was a student, I really hated the lecturers who would pick on me and say, what do you think? Because I find that extremely alarming. And lots of our students dislike that intensely. So I never pick on students. So I offer a range of ways of communicating with me. Students who don't want to communicate during a live session, that's fine. Afterwards, I would always write an email summing up what we've learned in that lesson, asking some questions in the email, and then suggesting to students that they might want to reply with some thoughts about that. And what I found is that the students who didn't want to talk in the class would reply to an email, and they would say, that was a great session, I really liked it, I learnt a lot. And that's all I need.
So the use of email there is interesting. Do you think it has any benefits over perhaps using a forum? Do you find email is better, or just an alternative?
I think that email is a good tool, it's a direct tool. Forums for collaboration are very good, because students can see what other students have said.
Did you change and adapt as you went along beyond what you've already told us? And have you got any perhaps experiences that you can share that worked, and any other pitfalls for us to avoid?
Yeah, quite a few, I think. So I would say that in general, less is more. Less is more. So if you have a module that's already run, you've got brilliant PowerPoints that you've worked up over the years. And the temptation is, of course, to want to use them to deliver, but it's not going to work. But they have a different life online. They can become your storyboard. They can become the way that you're going to take your students through a journey each week. And you can offer those PowerPoints. You can put them onto Moodle, and you can say to students, look, this is what I would have used in the classroom. I'm using a lighter version online, but please refer to these PowerPoints. I did that with my students. I found that you need to say much less. You need to speak a lot slower than you would have done in the classroom. Students quite often didn't catch me, and I had to say things again. That happened quite a lot, actually.
Can I also ask, Steve, about how you coped with getting students to talk to each other? Because I think a feature of many class sessions might be the ability for a tutor to say, right, break off into groups or talk to your neighbour. Did you find that you're able to recreate any of those sorts of experiences?
Yes, I was, but only after a certain amount of weeks. So these students had never met each other face to face, and that was a big challenge. I mean, in the coming academic year, if we're teaching honours level students, then they will have met each other last year, mostly, so they'll be a little bit more comfortable around each other. But this is probably true now for foundation level students who may not know each other very well. You need to be able to build a community before people are comfortable talking to strangers. I think that's particularly the case for adult learners.
it's the case that many tutors will be providing a mix of live sessions and also to replace some of the more substantial traditional lectures or classes, they're providing some recorded asynchronous materials or perhaps activities in between the live sessions. What was your students' experience? Did you use asynchronous materials? Did students do things that weren't live?
The sessions were entirely live. On our Moodle page, I posted the PowerPoints I was going to use beforehand. I would post on there also a recap after the class for students to read through, and that typically had a number of questions or prompts, things to think about. I encourage students then to email me with answers to those questions, but the primary mode of delivery was entirely synchronous.
Yeah, and am I right in thinking, Steve, that you take your students really from perhaps not having written anything recently to being able to do some quite substantial or certainly more substantial writing? So is that something that you were able to do with these students?
Yes, it was. So typically these students wouldn't have written much at all since they left school at perhaps 15. In class, I would hand back essays the next week with my handwritten notes on. I couldn't do that. I had to think of a way of working fast. I can't mark essays on a screen fast. I need to print them and I need to scribble on them with a pen. My way of working, therefore, was to take my iPad, photograph the essay with my scribblings on it and email it back. And then I would encourage students then to ask any questions about my comments on the script. And that worked. That worked well.
On a program like that, you would expect a certain percentage to be perhaps lost by the wayside. How did you find that in comparison to face-to-face experiences?
A great success. Retention was better than ever before. We converted more students onto the degree last year than ever before. And it was that online group where I lost hardly any students, which contributed a great deal to that. So very happy with that.
But what about the student experience? Because for all of us, doing something new with some new technology, you were hinting at it there, it can be challenging. So did you have any, did your students have any particular difficulties? And is there anything to say about that?
There were some difficulties, nothing too major. But throughout the period of difficulties, I reassured the student that I was going to make sure they got through this. I wasn't going to just drop them. And if they couldn't get online, if the software wasn't working, I made sure that I had all the information via email and that I would catch up with them, sometimes by telephone while I talked them through things. But eventually things worked and I got them all online, got them all using Microsoft Word, got them using PowerPoint, got them using all the tools. Yeah, it was a success in the end. But patience is important, I think.
Just thinking in general, perhaps anybody who's embarking on this journey, possibly for the first time or just starting out, do you have any advice or tips for anyone from what you've experienced and what you've learned recently?
Keep it simple at the start. If you want to add complexity, do it over time. You don't want to have it too complex at the start and then fail. As you gain in confidence, then introduce new techniques and tools. Be honest with your students. Tell them this is new for you as well. My experience is that students are very understanding and very grateful for the hard work we're putting in here to deliver content. And they will be patient and tolerant with us if we make mistakes and stumble through. We'll get there in the end. And as long as our students know that as well, that's all good. The Gateway course is 3 hours in the classroom. Initially, I thought I could do 3 hours online. I could not. We were done in 1.5 hours live. The students were tired. I was tired. But working online is more tiring than in the classroom. You have to be more active. You've got to keep on talking, particularly if your students aren't talking, which is very likely. I don't like the silence. If your students haven't got their webcams on and their microphones aren't working, you are talking into a silence. I find that I have to keep umming and ahhing, humming to myself, talking to myself a little bit when I'm doing something, just to give signals to the students that I'm still here. I can't even see them. I haven't got that feedback mechanism anymore. That does become tiring. It does. So I would say that, overall, delivering content live online is more tiring than doing it face to face.
How are things looking for you for the next term? Because I appreciate that as well as delivering and managing the Gateway program, you also deliver and teach on other undergraduate modules.
I teach on three undergraduate modules, mostly focusing on social policy to undergraduates at foundation and honours level. So all three modules will be running from next week, and they are likely to recruit about 30 or 32 students each. And that is a challenge, actually, because we run our modules at CLL typically in a workshop format for 2 hours. We don't have a lecture seminar structure, which means there is no lecture to deliver online. I typically don't use PowerPoints in my undergraduate teaching. It tends to be a lot of board work and working in the classroom. So that is going to require quite a bit of adaption.
I can imagine. And what is your plan there, Steve? You'll be doing some live and some asynchronous or what? Have you worked that out yet? Do you know how that will be delivered?
Yes, I think I do. Although I'm open to this changing completely. I think that's good to be open to that, but it might change completely. I'm going to be doing, I think, a blend of face-to-face, live delivery and asynchronous as well. I think that the live session is really going to be me trying to reiterate the main points. I think the face-to-face sessions are mostly going to be about community building amongst my students and learning checks to make sure they understand. And then a lot of the material, which I can then put online on Moodle, which could be dealt with asynchronously, I'm going to be using Moodle forums, and I'm likely also to use shared PowerPoint slides where we can all contribute to them.
You are expecting to deliver some face-to-face sessions, is that right?
That's right, yes. To students who want to come in, I think we are likely to have students who cannot come in, so for those students we would have to support them entirely online.
One thing I might ask, actually, just to reflect on, is that there are plenty of benefits to meeting students face to face. We've talked about some of the challenges, but have you found, or can you say anything about perhaps what the benefits, other than not having to travel so much, of technology are? And is there anything that technology has enabled that we weren't able to do before?
That's a good question. And I think one of the main benefits has been but we tend to be producing a lot more material for our students, which allows them to go back and re-watch, re-listen, read again. Whereas we had at one time just assumed they would just keep up with us in the classroom. We now have got a lot more material they can go back to, and they can look at it again when they're unsure. And I think that's a great benefit for them.
We talked a little bit before about trying to include students as best you can. What about any students that might be more challenging? How can we deal with those online?
In the classroom, when you've got the benefit of body language, it's very easy just to say, OK, enough from you. Let's go to someone else. And you can do that with a smile on your face, and you can do that with body language, which tells the student, look, I'm lighthearted here. I don't mean this in a nasty way. I'm just opening this up to others. But when you are online, you need to be very careful, because it can come across sounding nasty if you tell someone to shut up. So you need to be very careful in the way that you tell a student, look, you great input so far, but let's see if any others want to speak as well. So what I've tended to do was to allow students to say what they want to say, and then I'll say, that's really brilliant, I wonder if any others might want to come in on that as well. And then progressively I may start to change that into, okay, yeah, that's good again, there's been quite a lot you've said so far, how about a little rest here and let's let others speak. And I progress slowly like that, ensuring that I'm quite close to the webcam and I've got a big smile on my face while I'm saying this, just to try and get the message across, but I don't mean this in a bad way.
Okay, thanks then, Steve. It's always good to talk, and thanks ever so much for all of your ideas and tips.
Thanks a lot, Jim, for having me.
So that's it for this third edition of the LDCU Talking Online Learning podcast. Thanks again to contributors Shaheen Charwood and Steve Gascoigne. My name is Jim Judges, and if you have something to share related to the world of online learning at Warwick, or know someone who does, then please do get in touch. I should reward you for making it this far, but instead of a podcast fact, how about a podcast tip? If you fancy a break from the news and work and other stresses and strains of life, then maybe consider listening to something new. If you fancy exploring something different podcast-wise, then try searching British Podcast Awards 2020 and explore some of the winners from this year. There's no shortage of good stuff to choose from, and there should be something for everyone. Okay, that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening.